Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today I'm thrilled to have returning guest Esther Kiss, the powerhouse CEO of Born to Influence. Esther is a master at taking experts from unknown to media maven in just 6 months. With over a decade of experience, she's helped industry titans like Gary Vaynerchuk and Ryan Levesque gain massive media exposure. If you're an entrepreneur stuck between seven and eight figures, Esther's unique approach to PR and media training might be the game changer you need. I've asked Esther to join us here today to share her story and strategies for transforming credibility into increased leads and sales. So, Esther, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me back, Daryl. I'm good. How are
I
you?
know we were having a blast before we hit record. It's always a good time when Esther and I are on the call together. So for those that don't know you, maybe, and they haven't heard our first interview, can you talk about like how did you even get started in entrepreneurship and on PR? Is this a family trade? Were your parents in this field? Are you just carrying the torch, or how did you come to it?
Are we going to count the 7-year-old adventures? Because
Sure.
that was, I think, the real start when I was really small. And we would spend the summers at my grandma's. And I always asked her what she was going to cook for lunch so that I could gather all the ingredients from the pantry. And I dragged them outside so she would have to to buy them. And all I wanted is to have that interaction that they would have to actually pay me money and I would give the change back and she
Yeah.
would send my grandfather. That's, I think, where maybe the bug was planted there. But like this business, I started it 11 years ago. And my background is in marketing. And I discovered this whole world of online coaches, consultants, speakers, authors. And so I thought, this is where I want to play, but I didn't know exactly what I would do. So we had this really good idea with a friend of mine to start a podcast. And I thought if we invite people who are well known in the industry and start developing those relationships, promote their books, give them an audience, then we'll get somewhere. I didn't know exactly where, right? And so that's what we did. And every single time when somebody gave an interview at the end, when I stopped the recording, I would say that, hey, I know you have this book coming out or you have this event. Would you like to be on other shows as well? And they always said yes. So I started connecting them and booking them for podcasts and all these different things completely for free just to invest in developing those relationships. And one of my clients came to me. He was working on the Facebook ad campaigns for an author, and they wanted to promote it also on podcasts. So he asked me if I could help them out. And I said, sure, of course. And he's like, yeah, but this time you have to charge for it. So I literally went on Google and Googled, like, how much does a publicist make? And we figured it out from there. So it became this agency where we now work with clients who are experts, coaches, consultants, speakers, authors who either want to get on traditional media like TV, radio, newspapers, some of the business publications like Forbes and Entrepreneur, and then also a lot of podcasts, YouTube shows, Facebook Live interviews. It just really depends on what makes sense for that particular person and their business. But I have to say, our clients are getting seven-figure results from the media interviews that we are booking for them. So it's the combination of publicity and marketing, which is where I started. I think that's really the key difference maker here. Because you can get all the publicity in the world. If there isn't a good way to monetize it, then it's nice, but that's what it is, right?
Actually, I remember speaking to someone who was a publicist, and he talked about it was the first time I heard it, you can get 1 million impressions, you can get 1 million eyeballs and $0. That happened all the time, which I think,
Yeah.
yeah. So I think that's because a lot of people are like, if Oprah would just mention me on her show back in the day, they used to be like, I made it. But for it's not necessarily, there is, it's good to be on the right stages, but I think there has to be a strategy behind it all, which I think makes, yeah.
Exactly.
So what would you recommend to someone who's maybe starting out or struggling right now in the PR? Like they're just not even sure where to begin. They're not a seven-figure entrepreneur, and maybe they're just a small business owner
Yeah.
or whatever. What do you recommend to them? What would you say?
The biggest thing is to understand where you are at in your business in terms of credibility. What kind of interviews have you done before? Maybe you were invited on some podcasts or an article here and there. Just take stock of that and see if there is anything that you could already use just to give you a tiny little bit of a head start that you can say that you've done something. If not, it's okay. It's not to worry about, but it's just nice to take stock, right? And then What you want to make sure is two things. One is that you have your conversion mechanism in place for your business. You have a good offer that people actually want to buy, right? So it cannot be something that we are just testing out and going on Oprah, right? That's a big wasted opportunity. So what you want to make sure is that you have done something with cold outreach or advertising or referrals or however you're getting a few clients in, you have proof of concept, right? So that's number one. And then number two is to really objectively assess what your message is and how does it fit in with what the media is interested in. So for most people who have never done any kind of media before, they usually it's a good place to start with getting some traditional media, for example, TV or radio or magazines, just because you get those as seen on big logos, right? And that it's huge for credibility. Now, if somebody has, for example, a weight loss offer or something that's really mainstream, real estate, something that the general public is interested in, I would always do traditional media as well as online media because it's not only newsworthy all the time, people are talking about these topics in the news, but also you're getting leads from there. For everybody else who has very niche offers, let's say you're teaching Facebook ads or something very that would not be interesting to the general public, then you might want to take a meta view of, okay, how can I apply my expertise in business to something that the news media would be interested in? Maybe you get featured in Forbes or Entrepreneur, Business Insider, those kinds of things. And then focus the rest of your efforts on podcasts and YouTube shows and Facebook Live interviews, things where you're going after very niche audiences that are already interested in your topic and your expertise, and they're in a position to buy. And just to give you an example, I have a coaching client who we just started with a couple of weeks ago, and she is such an action taker. Her name is Angela Williams. And in one day, she got booked for Authority Magazine, which has over 30 million readers, right? And it's great for SEO. And the same day, she booked an article for Business Insider. And they both came out the same day. So I was so thrilled to
Wow.
see that. That's 160 million people between the two publications combined. That's a lot. And in the Business Insider article, her name and her expertise is mentioned like five times. So it's
Wow.
absolutely, and she had no publicity before. So you absolutely can do it really quickly as long as you do what we teach and take action.
So how do you align? Can you give an example? How do you align your niche thing? When you say that, I get it conceptually. I got to take my thing and put it and spin it, not spin it, but position it. Frame it in a way that applies to a larger, but can you give an example of that?
So to stay with this example, with Angela, she's a licensed psychotherapist and a leadership coach, which sounds a little bit fluffy maybe for some people. Leadership, like how do we connect that to the news? A journalist was working on an article where Biden just dropped out of the presidential race, right? And so they wanted to do an article where experts who understand the psychology behind when people get older and they have to face coming to an end in their career, what does that mean for them emotionally? And that was just the perfect fit for her. So things like that, where you just look at where is my expertise and how can I connect it to what the news media is already talking about.
I love that. And how do you even get considered?
So you would apply if you see, start following journalists who already are working on topics that you have good knowledge where you could contribute, and then very often they will post on their social or through their email newsletter or through friends of friends. There are also professional PR platforms that we share with our clients where they can access these. So that's for things where they're already working on an article and they just want to quickly, they want sources for it, right? So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is you start building your relationships with a journalist and then you pitch them a brand new idea. So there is no something that they were already working on. You have a brand new idea, but you know why it's important to that particular columnist because you've been following their work. And the same for TV, same for radio, all of them.
Yeah, disclaimer. Well, I don't know if this is a disclaimer, but to be transparent, as an example, Esther has been sending people for my podcast for a while now, and we've had a relationship
Yeah, how many years?
for a number of years. And she'd be like, "Hey, this person might be a fit for your show." And so it's just gotten to the point where Esther just has her own mug, her own key to the house coffee mug. That's part of how that works. You build relationships with someone, and then you And it takes time, but it sounds like it's very worthwhile.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, I shared in my Facebook group yesterday when this article with Angela came out. Actually, it was the other one, the Authority magazine one, and somebody commented on it. And it was an old client of mine. And he was saying that when Esther did the same thing for me, it was so valuable. I did so many reprints and sent it out in direct mail, and it worked so well. And I still use it to this day. And I worked
Wow.
with him, like, I want to say 7 years ago, long time ago. And but this guy reached out to me originally when I did the interview on your podcast. He sent me his book in the mail. He sent me a letter. He's, I heard you on the show. I want to work with you.
That's
And
excellent.
it's like sometimes these things, like, really, they stay with you for a long time.
Yeah, what I love about podcasting, and maybe I shouldn't say this because I don't want to create more competition, but I still get downloads from interviews that I did in 2016. And so I just find it to be such a high impact activity where people really get to know and trust you, but you got to make it so they can be found. And so I love that you talk about maybe you're at home, but getting featured in other places and that process. So now some people feel like they're introverts. So is there only, are certain media better for certain types of people? Are there some that you would only recommend if you're very charismatic? Like, how does it work out? Is there?
If you're introverted, you're screwed. No, it's really finding a way to figure out how can I share my message in a way where I shine the best. And I will say that even if somebody is super extroverted, if you don't know anything about media, then you would think that's a natural good starting place, but not necessarily, because extroverted people tend to be sometimes very talkative, right? And if you go on a TV interview and you have 3 minutes total, including the questions, you have to be very mindful of how do you share those talking points in a way that's really accessible. So what we like to do is, if somebody has not done media before, or they have done it but they did not see really great results, one of the things that we make sure is go through some media training, how to present yourself. That said, some people are still camera shy, or they just, whatever, they have a preference, for example, towards writing over doing on-camera interviews. Then do articles. You could do that, or you could do audio stuff only. But I will say now, especially since COVID, video content is really taking over. Podcasts used to be audio only for the most part, and now most of them have a video component. So I would just say practice a little bit, make sure that you are comfortable on camera, you're presentable, have good lighting, etc. You'll be fine.
I love that. I love that. So one of the things I think we should talk about, because I think it's a critical component, and I've been working very closely with Michael Gerber for a few months now, and he's really beaten this into my head. And you talk about knowing your message. And the other thing you said is that you don't want to be experimenting your offer. You don't want to be, sorry, testing your offer and that, so to speak. So for someone, do you have any suggestions? Is there any, when if have you worked with people that are either have something new or they're still trying to refine their message? And is there any tip for someone that's trying to figure that out? Because it really is such a critical part of this that I want to take a second to give space for that.
Of course. So what you want to think about when it comes to your message is, what does my ideal client want? What are their desires? What are their fears? And what kind of problems can you help them solve? Right? The same exact thing that you would have in a sales situation, because those are some of the topics that you typically would address anyway through your content marketing, if you're doing anything on social media, for example, or in your newsletter or paid ads also, right? You are addressing very specific things to join people with a conversation that's happening in their head, right? The Claude Hopkins thing. So you would then figure out those key components, those issues that they have, and what's the underlying emotion behind it. So to give you an example, let's say you are some kind of a marketing or business expert or coach who is helping others grow their business, whether it's through funnels or Facebook ads or whatever, copywriting, you have some kind of expertise that's related to that, right? So why would somebody not buy from you? If they come on a sales call with you, why would they not buy? Either because they've been burned before, which is why part of the reason why we are building credibility with the media interviews, so they will trust you, right? Why would they not buy? Maybe because they don't trust that you can actually deliver on the things that you say that you can. Now, if you have great case studies and testimonials, that's great. You can also do a lot, again, through interviews where you share some client success stories that just happened. I just did a minute ago with Angela, right? So that's a really great natural way of doing it, where you're building trust very quickly. Another reason they might not want to buy from you is, for example, they don't trust themselves. That's a possibility. And so, what is the emotional underlying reason behind that? Usually, it's self-confidence, it's imposter syndrome, it's those kinds of things. And so, if you can be just a little bit vulnerable about it, how you have something in your own life as the expert where you have the same kind of experience, share that and then share a lesson from that through your interviews, you immediately build that bond. So, everything that's going on with them, you prevent those types of objections just simply by creating the right kind of content through interviews.
I love that. Credibility is such an underappreciated thing. Like sorry, I want to articulate this clearly, but I think a lot of people don't understand how important the credibility piece to this is because we're all in our own heads. We're all in our own businesses. We know what we're capable of. We know all our businesses' track records. We're so aware of it. Other people are super skeptical, and everyone's been burned in some way, shape, or form. And I have seen two different people make a very similar offer. One person is an unknown, or at least their track record was unknown. The other person is well known, and the well-known person is just having money thrown at them. I remember I did a promotion. We were trying to get people to show up to a group Zoom call, like a webinar. And we just announced that there would be an offer on the call. And people, and this was like thousands of dollars. And without even showing up to the Zoom call, people were buying. And I've never sent an email and had someone be like, here, take 10 grand on my credit card right now. Just here you go. What? What? Normally you got to talk and do the song and dance and all that stuff, but credibility of results. And I realized there's something called the income earning. I don't remember where I first heard it, but it really makes sense. The income earning ladder at the bottom are generalists. Like a dentist makes what any dentist can make. But then who makes more than a dentist is a specialist, like an orthodontist. And the reason is by being an orthodontist, the dentist can figure out the job, but nobody wants to be the guinea pig. So the orthodontist can command a higher price because there's a higher degree of confidence in the result I'm after. The dentist could figure it out. I don't want to be a guinea pig. I'll pay a little more to get an orthodontist to do it because they're the specialist. And the people who make more than specialists are the trainers of specialists. And the reason why a trainer is one, they train people. It's another income stream. But also, a trainer, even if they're not the best, I should at least get industry average, right? If I'm hiring the trainer. So again, it's about a higher degree of believability and confidence in the result. That's what I'm buying as a result. And at the end of the day, the people who make the most above it all are celebrities because of supply and demand, right? Dr. Phil is a therapist or a consultant, or I don't want to, I'm not trying to throw shade at anyone, but whatever. He's a clinical psychologist. And if he were to auction off an hour of his time, he would make significantly more than your local clinical psychologist because of supply and demand. And so I think that's a good frame for people to think is first, you got to have the offer and you got to build that credibility. And I think part of that is then amplifying it. It's throwing gasoline on a fire you already have. It's not going to give the sparks. It's going to throw gasoline on something you've already got.
That's exactly it. And it's just going back for a second to what your niche is or what your offer is. If it's something really broad that's applicable to a lot of people, like real estate or weight loss or anything along those lines, that's really a mass personal finance, for example, then you will get both from being in the media, traffic and credibility. So buyers and having that positioning. If you have a niche offer, then just do some that is with the big names because that's enough. You don't have to be on TV every week for that, right? If you're the kind of person who, let's say you are a legal expert, absolutely be on TV all the time because people will see you on the news and they will come to work with you. But if you have a niche offer, take advantage of being able to do, there are literally millions of podcasts. Like, why would you not do it? And some of them are really easy to get on too. So it's just a really big missed opportunity. When you were talking about the dentist, one analogy or one example that came to mind for me too, and I might be botching the specifics on this, but have you seen that viral video in the New York subway where there's that violinist who is playing for pennies that
This
nobody
famous,
ever
yeah.
gives him anything? And then it turns out that he actually plays for the New York Philharmonic. But they don't know because he's not dressed that way. He looks like one of those street musicians, and the positioning is just not right. And it doesn't matter what the talent is. And if you think about it, when we translate this to an expert, nobody will recognize you if you're not looking the part.
I love that. I love that. I love that. That's true. If you think about, I interviewed a guy forget his name now, but he it was a great interview. He's a Shopify expert, and he thought about all the things that might help convince someone to buy, and he just made it a mission of his to just collect all the awards, all the accolades that were available in his industry. And it transformed his business because it's not that he learned new skills. It's that more people learned how good he was. It was by winning those awards, by going after them. And so it's really interesting to hear that. And I think that's really powerful. So how do you monetize on it now? Okay, let's got an offer. I know it converts. I know my personality type. I know maybe I've done some Toastmasters training, so I count my ums and ahs, and I don't say my catchword is. How do you monetize on this now?
So there are a couple of ways that are really easily accessible to everyone that I would suggest that you do immediately. So one is have a look at what you're already doing in your sales and marketing funnels. Maybe you're getting referrals, maybe you're doing social media posting online, maybe you're doing paid ads. Just really make a list of specifically what do you do every day or every week to try and get clients. Maybe you're doing partnerships with referral partners, whatever it is, doesn't matter if it looks big or small. Maybe you do speaking gigs, right? Make that list. And now think about, okay, if I were to get featured, for example, on ABC or in Forbes magazine or Women's Health or whatever it may be that's applicable to you, or in a handful of podcasts, where can I take these assets that these media companies will produce for me for free? And use it to boost the results in my existing marketing activities. For example, if you have an email newsletter and somebody signs up, they usually get a welcome series, right? They get a few emails where you're welcoming them into your world, explaining your story, your methodology. How much more powerful would it be if instead of just talking about yourself, you can point them to an interview that you just did that will share with them your story and your methodology? Can you see how that works?
Yeah.
So this is like super easy for everybody to do. Another one is you could share it on social media, which will also help you not only build that recognition and that credibility, but the podcast hosts and the TV producers will love you for it. The journalists are also rated on how much traffic they're getting to their pieces of content, right? So if you tag them and they see that you're actually good about sharing it, that makes them look good too. And you're much more likely to get another opportunity again and again to be featured in that platform. So that those are the easy no-brainers. If you are doing paid ads, for example, well, take your interview on Fox, that video clip, use it as a retargeting ad. If you have a video sales letter, splice it in the beginning to really set the tone in the beginning that you are this person who's been featured in all these different places. And it could be just like a few seconds of a couple of clips that you've done or like a screenshot of an article. Those kinds of things really help make sure that you're setting expectations. They can see you as the go-to expert in your industry. And you can literally split test this, and we have done this, and compare it to the same VSL, but without that, and see what the results are. It's so much better. If you're not doing any of this, but let's say you have sales calls, people come in a consultation with you and they want to potentially buy from you, before they would get on a call, you can send them some information, including an interview or two, right? If you're doing long-term follow-up with someone, they were not ready to buy today, but you want to keep in touch. Imagine the experience of that person instead of you bugging them every couple of weeks, hey, are you ready? And let's just send them an article. Hey, I was featured here and I thought this specific thing that we talked about, this would be helpful for you. Here's an article that I did. Here's a podcast interview. So you can keep in touch with people in a much easier way. The same with referrals. So those are all the things where you're taking your published interviews and use it to boost the results of everything else that you're already doing.
I love that.
And then the other way of monetizing it is the actual direct traffic that comes from there. And this is where most people fall short because they think that's all there is to it, right? I'm going to be on Oprah and I'm going to be famous and I'm going to be rich. And it doesn't work that way, right? You will see a spike of traffic if you're going on a really big outlet and people are reaching out and messaging you and all those things. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. You really want to then take that interview and use it in your existing marketing activities so that it can give you tangible results for years and years to come.
I love that. It's a great, and as an example, you can use the things that you've done to get you more. So I had a book that hit number one on Amazon years ago, and I used that to get on local TV, radio, all that sort of stuff. And now I'm on local TV and radio, and I can use that to try and get interviews. And in fact, I actually Didn't do univer I didn't go to university. I was an orphan. No one was going to pay my school fees that. I didn't get to go to university, but I got to go work in the States because you had to have a university degree or equivalent experience. And my book that had hit number one on Amazon and all my interviews that I had done was the equivalent. And it worked. It got me in. I could have spent whatever, 100 grand in 4 years of my life, or done this, grown my business at the same time, and it still was a pass. So,
I love that. That's the secret to getting to work in the US. So
yeah.
many people want to come here. And that's true. There is a specific visa. I remember I looked into it years ago too, the special talent visa, they call it. And one of the things that you can do is exactly show that you've been in all these different media outlets because that shows and gives weight to you. You're not just saying that you're good, other people are saying about you too.
I love that. Yeah, it's not what you say about yourself, it's what other people say about you. Now, this might seem like a nuanced question, but is there a way to do it tactfully versus, because I know I've seen and I've had people do it to me where it feels like they're shoving stuff down my face and it feels more like bragging or it does, you know what I'm saying? Is there any way you recommend how to do that? Like, I guess a simple, I guess a couple examples is like you mentioned before, as seen on logos. Like you can very nonchalantly just have as seen on in your email signature, for example, and now you're not shoving in someone's face. Or maybe like a PS to, if you haven't, go check out my interview on this popular famous show, whatever type thing. Is there any other sort of strategies that you would recommend? You already talked about some using it in a welcome email, but in terms of how to make sure that they do it tactfully. I don't know if
So
that's right.
what's your concern about not being tactful? Give me a little bit more clarity so I can address
I
that.
have seen instances where too much forcing of reviews and testimonials has decreased conversions. Not always, but there are cases where it's like people are being bombarded. And so it's not a case necessarily of more is better in that at that time, if that makes sense. That's where I wanted to ask, and that's why I said it might be a weird, bit of a weird question, but
I think that there are good ways to do it where you are really doing it because your concern primarily is the audience's benefit. Can I help this audience? So, for
perfect.
example, if I were pitching a podcaster and I have an article in Inc. magazine that just came out, I could say that, look, I actually just shared some of my method in this article here in Inc. and I thought your audience would really benefit from going deeper into this topic. What do you think? So,
I
this is
love
very
that.
different. Now, look at me, I'm an
Yeah, right.
Inc., right?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So framing it in the way that the content is useful for the person. Versus look how great I am. I think that's the per that's exactly, I didn't know how to phrase it, but that's the perfect. And then
Yeah,
of
and
course.
another thing too about the wrong way of using media logos is I'm sure you have seen it, especially I would say 2018, 19, there was still a lot of it, but even today we see some of when people have a Facebook or whatever a social media profile picture, they do it with a white background and they put a ton of logos into the picture of their face, like right next to their face, not on a banner, but right next to their face. And they put ABC, NBC. It's, first of all, it's so cheesy. It looks really bad. But secondly, I've never seen someone who has done that and they were actually interviewed on those outlets. This
Oh,
just
that's
blows my
a big
mind. You know
no-no.
what they do typically is they send out a press release, which may have been picked up on like some affiliate station somewhere, nowhere. And
Right.
it was not an actual interview. They
Two.
just printed it because they've been paid for it, right? A press
Right.
release. That's not
Yeah.
what these logos are meant for with the as seen on credibility build. And journalists know this. When they see someone with a profile photo like that, it's immediately they're gonna pass. So just
Right.
don't do that.
I love that. That's such good tips. And this is stuff that works today. It works tomorrow. It's stuff that's worked for the last 20 years. It'll work for the next 20 years. And again, it just sounds one of the things, even your own story, you didn't really mention it, but I think it's also a powerful lesson is when you were getting started, you did it for free. And then because you were good at it, people wanted more and paid for it. And I think that's a really important thing where the key critical component to this, I mentioned earlier, I've been working with Michael Gerber, the author of The E-Myth, for the last few months. And that's even one of the things that he's an advocate of. His whole The E-Myth is about every business has a three-legged stool. You have your client fulfillment system, your lead conversion system, and your lead generation system. But you start with the client fulfillment system because that is the backbone of everything. And you, until you're confident in being able to fulfill and desire, fulfill and deliver consistent quality over and over, the rest is almost a moot point. Alex Hormozi talks about his book, $100 Million Offers, and he said he spent a year working on that book. But because it gets people results, he has to do very little marketing of it because it's
Mm-hmm.
a quality product. And I think that a lot of people could go deeper into that. Greg Glassman, the guy who founded CrossFit, has this talk that I love where he talks about markets are unknown and unknowable. If I asked you today, I'm paraphrasing, but if I asked you today how many people are in market to buy a car, we could look at keyword searches and foot traffic of locations, but ultimately it's an unknown number and it's constantly fluctuating. So it's unknown and unknowable. But everyone can recognize excellence. So if I'm just very clear about the problem I solve and I obsess over being the most excellent provider of the solution for that problem, that in its own, it's a whole work hard in silence, let results make the noise. That's a really big part of it. But that said, you do need to throw gasoline on your own fire. Yeah, give yourself your own gold
Yeah,
stars.
I mean, if we look at this car example, yeah, we don't know exactly how many people, but we have an idea that it's not going to be 8 billion. It's
Right.
not every single person on earth, right?
Right.
It's also not going to be one. It's somewhere in between.
Right.
And also, not everybody will want a Ferrari or a Toyota. People have preferences. They have things that they can afford, right? So there are ways to gauge what people might be interested in based on what already sells and how you're able to innovate
Right.
on that. And
Right.
how you can position yourself. And I hate to give this example, but if you look at Tesla, for example, right? It's not, they're not even advertising. It's literally
Yeah.
running on Elon's PR moves.
And they have an amazingly qual and I'm just beating the drum because sometimes I've had people reach out to me for help and you start trying to help them. And the problem is sometimes if the product or service is not as good as you think it is, which maybe because you're not asking your clients and getting feedback when you deliver it, that you have to do more in marketing and sales to keep the thing alive. And so to back to the Tesla point, it's such a great product that you know, that's why PR just works like gangbusters. We both have had clients where some clients get amazing results and other ones are so. And sometimes it's the market, sometimes it's the offer. It's hard to say. And I just wanted to put that in there as well that marketing is really a superpower, but it can become a double-edged sword if you use it to go out. Like you mentioned, we said this before. If you try to push a message that isn't converting, if you're trying to push an offer people don't want, if they actually, we talked about Oprah. There's something called the Oprah effect where people would want to be mentioned by Oprah, but it would actually crush businesses. And they actually had a team that would have to audit a business before she could mention because time to time, Oprah would show up and she'd be like, oh, I just stopped at my favorite bakery and I got these muffins. They're so cute. I love them. And it wasn't a paid sponsor, but it was just genuine. But it would create such a storm of people to the business. And if it's a small mom or pop shop, people don't care. They were like, the
Yeah.
negative reviews could pile up. My muffin was not fully cooked, and hey, I only got five, not six, and whatever, because they didn't have the means and the ability to handle that demand. So I just want to take a second also mention that you really have to be prepared. It's the whole like Abraham Lincoln. If I had 7 hours to cut down a tree, I would spend six sharpening my axe. It's really
Yeah.
worthwhile to make sure that you've got something that really delivers, that you can handle it. And then by all means, throw all the gasoline on it as well. And following Esther's advice, obviously her case studies, the track record, I've worked with her for years, this sort of stuff works like gangbusters. But what I want to make sure people listening know is that you really do need to have your ducks in a row for this to work incredibly well. Otherwise, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. You don't want to spend all this.
And you know what comes to mind too is when you think about publicity or any kind of marketing effort really is don't think in terms of black and white, like an on and off switch, right? It's not like we start ads today and then tomorrow we are making $1 million. It doesn't work that way. Same with PR. We could get you probably on Oprah Daily, the new pub, not new, but the publication that she currently has. We might be able to, but that might not be the best place to start if you don't have media experience. And with people who have knowledge-based expertise, they're coaches, consultants, like a lot of people in your audience, they don't necessarily have to worry about physical products running out of stock and that kind of thing. But there is still that fulfillment barrier capacity, right? So you don't necessarily want to start with the biggest shows immediately. And also just it takes practice. We talked about media training a little bit, but it takes practice to actually be really compelling when you share your message. So I would always recommend if you're brand new, take some media training and do at least three, four, five interviews. You don't need to do 100, let alone smaller podcasts, because that will just give you a little bit of practice of not just thinking through your message in your head, but actually having a conversation. And you will watch them back, listen to them back. Most people hate their voice initially if they are not
Right.
used to recording, right? So you've got to get over that. Like all those things, it's fine. That's just a playground. And from there, you can scale.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. Really refined. And you mentioned this before as well, which I think is important, is that it's not necessarily about count. It's impressive your client got in publications that's got a combined something like 160 million for their audience. But if I'm selling teenage girl clothing and I get 160 million geriatric men to hear my message, that's a message market mismatch, right? These old senior citizens are not going to buy my teenage jeans. They don't fit in them. They don't look at, they don't care about. So that's the, I think that's a really, that was a really powerful point for people to consider is what are the, what am I trying to say? The channel, what are the media, the main media outlets? Who are the
What kind of media is right for you? Where is your audience? Where are your buyers? What kind of media do they consume? You just build it backwards from there.
Right. Now, what about when someone goes on for an interview of some sort? Do they do an open pitch? Do they offer something for free? How do you handle that? Because I know some platforms do permit, some don't.
Yeah. So with traditional media, usually you would not be saying, hey, here's the link to my webinar. If
Right,
you go on
right.
TV, that's not going to work. So with traditional media, usually they do mention if you are the author of a book, for example, sometimes you might even be able to have that there. So that's nice. You don't have to have a book, but that's a good place to start if you have it. Otherwise, they usually will say the company that you started or that you run or you're a founder of when they introduce you, and they also put it on the lower third and the writing on the screen. So that will help you there. For online, same for radio, for magazines, let's just say, to stay with the book example, you are featured in Bloomberg or one of these publications. They're not gonna link to your book on your website in most cases, but they're very comfortable linking to an Amazon page. So you would just think this through, and as an author, have an Amazon page. And again, you don't have to have a book, but that's a good way to get traffic to your website, get people into your world, right? And then there are all the other strategies from there that maybe on the look inside section in the book, you can give them a free download that they have to go to your website. It's like, there's just a lot of ways that you can do stuff.
The ditch is coming
But
out. There we go.
And then the other thing, why do they want that? One, because as the reputation of that media outlet, they can't risk it. And who knows what kind of dodgy website that is, right? Like they just don't have the time to really properly evaluate sometimes people when they have to write 5 articles a day. But secondly, also because they're actually getting commissions on Amazon. So most people who work in the media are affiliates for Amazon. And when you click on something, you put some stuff in your cart, whether or not that's the book that we mentioned, they are getting a commission and everything else that's in that cart for what, 30 days. So for them, it's worth it. That's why it's worth it as well. Now, if you're doing something like a podcast, usually they do want you to have some kind of a next step for the audience, truly to help them grow, right? So that would be something like a Facebook group that you have, or a free downloadable cheat sheet, or a quiz, or whatever that normally you would advertise for people to opt into your email newsletter. You would use that on a podcast.
I love that. I think that's super powerful. Now, I want to pivot a bit because you've worked with so many high-level entrepreneurs, seven-figure entrepreneurs and above. Do you see, what are some of the habits that you see these high-performance people that they've got that maybe you don't see with other people that are just getting started or something? What are some of the commonalities? Right.
As always, is taking action very quickly. They just iterate really fast. Second, they don't tolerate no results. I should say they don't tolerate bullshit. So you just gotta own what you took a commitment for, and you actually deliver on that. And that not just for PR, for everything, right? That's what they expect from their team, from their clients, etc. They just like when things happen fast, and they do the same themselves. And then I think a third thing is long-term perspective. Because a lot of people who are not successful, sometimes it's because they really don't have the experience yet and they're trying different things, and that's fine. But if you actually want to build a successful business, you have to take the long view into account and stay the course. If that means, let's say, you started a podcast of your own, don't give up after 3 months, which is where most new podcasters drop off. There is a term for it, pod fade, where most people thought it was easy and it's not. Oops, okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. So you have to stay with it. And yeah, those are the three main things, I think.
I love that. I love that. And where do you see things going over the next, say, 5, maybe even 10 years? What trends are you watching? Because obviously there's all sorts of new advances in technology. There's things happening geopolitically. There's economic things at play. What are some of the trends that you're paying attention to, and how are you preparing for the future?
So one thing that I'm definitely seeing is AI is a huge one, of course. You have to be mindful with how you're using it, specifically when it comes to pitching the media. Just so you know, most media outlets do not allow AI generated content and they can't check about it. So don't even try to write your ChatGPT pitch, make an actual pitch, right? They actually sometimes they do say it in the queries that, okay, I'm looking for an expert on this topic, but don't my editor will not allow, right? So make sure that it's an actual human written piece. Another thing that I'm seeing that is definitely happening is people are getting educated online. So any kind of non-traditional way of learning, like for example, online courses and coaching and masterminds, or that's a huge and growing industry. Fewer and fewer people care to actually go to college, or they don't have the funds to go to college. They may not want to go into debt because they know that they're not necessarily going to work in that field anyway for the first few years. And so they're seeking other ways of how can they get the same kind of knowledge and work in the field that they actually want. Now, obviously, this doesn't apply to lawyers and doctors and regulated professions, but for everybody else, probably you can find a way to buy a course for $200 or let's say up to $5,000 if you're, it's some kind of coaching program to get started and get really good results. And that's not anywhere near the cost of a college degree. And then the third one that I'm seeing a huge trend about is this whole influencer thing. There have been studies where they ask 7th and 8th graders, what do you want to be? And they're saying things like a TikToker, a YouTuber, an influencer. And it's cute, but they don't necessarily have the business mindset of it. Right, that they actually have to have some kind of a service. Don't just rely on brand deals. Don't just have your platform on that one social media platform. That's okay, they will learn. But they are getting the important part, and that is visibility. Because if people don't know who you are, you don't have that positioning. And we came full circle here, right? Having that credibility. If maybe you have never been featured in the media, but if you have 500,000 followers on Instagram, people will notice, right? So that's a huge trend is being visible online.
I love that. Yeah. So really, all a company is a group of people that help another group of people via a product or service. There's two different ways to do it. You might want to go the route of building the audience and then figuring out the product or service. I mean, it doesn't even have to be your own. You can partner with someone to sell. There's a lot of influencers, though, that have built a following and then they don't know what to do with it. They can't monetize it. It's almost like the podcaster dilemma, right? Podcast fade. I've built this thing and then what? And then there's the other hand where you have the thing, but then how do I need more people to sell it to? Great tip. For people that have their message, for people that have an offer that converts, for people that are looking to throw gasoline on their fire, what are some of the next steps if someone wanted to engage with you? How do they get in touch? What does that look like?
So the best way is just to email me at Esther, Esther, at borntoinfluence.com. It's super easy. I also have a free Facebook group that you can join. I shared over 80 guides there for free on how to get media attention and visibility. And that group is called Successful Talented Entrepreneurs. You can just look it up on Facebook and or go to borntoinfluencecommunity.com and it will take you to that Facebook group.
So you can email Esther, Esther, at borntoinfluence.com, borntoinfluence.com. And then what does it look like when someone engages with you and starts to work? So they email you, they go, "Hey, Esther, I've got something. I need your help to throw some gasoline on my fire." What are the next
Yeah.
steps?
So I'll just give you a couple of options for times to book a time. Let's hop on a quick call and discuss it. I still do this personally myself because I want to make sure that the person that we take on, the new client, is actually marketable. So I'm not gonna take on somebody whose message is so abstract or so niche that we don't think we can help them, and or if they don't have the business behind it, right? We have sometimes beginners, but usually they're people who have the money to invest, and they're not only investing in PR, but other aspects of their business too. So sometimes that happens. But for the most part, it's really ideal if you have at least made a few sales so you know that offer works.
I love it. Esther, this has been such an informative call. I've got a couple pages of notes, as always. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you about?
One thing that's really an interesting one is ego. And that sometimes comes up when we are talking about media. And it's just so important you touched on it a little bit with not being too boastful about where you've been featured and those kinds of things. But I'm just thinking, like, even today, somebody emailed me and the language was pretty aggressive. Like, you have to understand me first to look at all these videos that I created, and then maybe I'll talk to you. And I'm like, dude, do I have time for this? I just emailed them back politely that thank you, it's not a fit. Because if somebody is coming with a huge ego, there is no way it's going to be a happy relationship. It's important that when you get featured in the media, use it for good. It sounds very naive, but use it for good. Use it to actually help people, and in turn, it will help your business.
Yeah, I love that. In today's day and transparency, I think that's what we're going through. Everyone that's listening to this knows that things have been odd since COVID, to say the least. There's a lot happening. There's a lot. And I don't think that it's the world's getting worse. I think there's just more things coming to light, and sunlight's the best disinfectant. And I'm hopeful that it's a process of our growth and evolution as a species, that being able to see these things, have conversations about them, that we can decide what we want to be like as a species together. And the days of being a charlatan are numbered. I love that you mentioned that the most successful people, they play long-term games with long-term people, because compound interest in your health, in your relationships, in your business, that's where all the treasures are. It's through the long-term compounding effect. And if you're a jerk, it's like they say, money's not evil, but if you give an evil person money, now you've got like a true force to reckon with. Someone's good and you give them money, they're going to do good with it. And I think that's an important thing too. So great message. Esther, I always enjoy our calls so much. Thank you so much for your time, knowing you have your own followers, your own people to talk to, your own clients, your own community. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience tonight so we can all do our PR a little bit better.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.